This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities or Mother Nature's recipes that bring the bare necessities of life.
Place to Be Nation, pop experience. Forget about your worries and your strife. The bare necessities is all you ever need in life. I am Andy Atherton, and welcome to Pop Goes the Classics. This is our Disney retrospective, our chronological rewatch here on the Place to Be Nation Pop Experience. As I always said, I always repeat myself twice, but you know what? It's such a great place. We got to keep shouting the name. Anyway, we are here talking about the classic Disney films. I am not alone. No, I have two great co-hosts. Let's start off to my, I guess, my right, geographically, I'm guessing, because I'm facing north, I think, over coming to us from the great land of Slovakia, right? I always do it right. I always forget. Sometimes, like, I'm going to say you're, like, over in Sokovia, so...
Okay, I have a friend that does that all the time. He texts me and he's like, "How's Sokovia?" And I'm like, "South America." And we're like, "Same."
The Scarlet Witch of Place to Be Nation, Miranda Berthold. Hello, Miranda.
Hello, Andy. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, kind of. You know what it is? I drank my coffee really late today, so I'm a little off kilter.
We have had three cups of coffee, so I feel you. I feel you.
But I love this movie, and I am very excited to talk about it with you guys.
Awesome.
Right, and also to my left, in a much warmer part of the world than we both are, Mr. Steve Riddle. Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm good. And what's sad is that I have that same exact thought that when I do the introduction, I'm going to mistake Slovakia for Sokovia. I don't know why. It's just because they sound so alike. It's
At the time we're recording, the biggest thing right now that everybody's talking about is WandaVision. So we have Sokovia on the brain.
Right.
All right. So this is our, you know, let's, we didn't say how many episodes in we are. This is actually our 15th episode. Wow. That's quite the milestone for this series. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we are up to 1967's The Jungle Book. It was produced by Walt Disney Productions. It was based on Rudyard Kipling's 1894 book of the same name. It was the 19th Disney animated feature films. We, as those of you who are familiar with the series, we did combine some shows, so that's why it's our 15th episode, but 19 films we've covered, directed by Wolfgang Reitherman. It was the last film to be produced by the man himself, Walt Disney, who had died during the production. He actually passed away a year before this movie came out. The plot follows Mowgli, a feral child raised in the Indian jungle by wolves, as his friends Bagheera the panther and Baloo the bear try to convince him to leave the jungle before the evil tiger Shere Khan arrives. All right, so this, what we like to do is we'll go out and peel the curtain back a little bit. How we like to work things here is that if the movie is near and dear to one of us, they sit in the host chair, I guess, so to speak, and kind of drive the episode. And this is one of my all-time favorite Disney animated films. And I just love it. It moves along so nicely. The characters, the voice cast is probably one of my favorite of all time, where the voice and the character are so perfectly matched. And there are like what we would call repeat offenders, so to speak, like a lot of voices that you'll hear in movies, Disney animated films from before, and you're going to hear them later as well. But they just fit so well. That's really one of the tough things about animation. Sometimes you could be a really funny voice, but if they don't have the character match right to you, mm-hmm. if you don't understand it, it's not going to work. So let's talk about our initial viewings and how our love or how we feel about the movie going into this rewatch. We'll start with you, Miranda. What are your earliest memories of seeing this movie and your feelings about it?
So I know I saw it way sooner than what I remember, but I think the reason that I don't remember seeing it until probably 90-ish is because my brothers are several years younger than me, and there's three of us, and my brother closest in age to me is the middle child. It is his favorite movie, and we watched it so much over and over again. It was like one of the only times that you could get him to like sit still and be quiet, other than the fact of like he'd dance and sing along, but like engaging wise. So I don't, my like best memory and most prevalent is probably very early, like 89, 90 time frame is when it would be. And just sitting in this tiny apartment that we lived in, and him just watching it like over and over and over on this VHS tape that we had. And just kind of, you know, I can see him in his little like onesie footed pajamas going, "Wanna be wikey, woo, woo, woo." And I don't know, like, I love that. Like, now he's 30 something and he'd probably hate that I'm telling the world about this, but it was his favorite movie. And we'll get to my baby brother's favorite movie when we get closer into the 90s, but this was definitely it, and we watched it so much over and over and over, and I think it's like it's nice to have that memory basically.
Mm-hmm. Steve, what are your earliest memories of this movie?
Yeah, this is definitely another one I remember having on VHS as a kid in the 90s, and it's one I've always definitely enjoyed. But I'd say it's like an all-time favorite of mine, you know, maybe like next tier in terms of favorites. Like, it's not an all-time favorite, but it is one of my favorites. And it's just a film that's just really enjoyable to watch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is so much fun, and it has staying power and very memorable. Great music, and I gush about the voice cast. Because, you know, as Miranda well knows, that like one of my dream jobs would be to ever to do voices for animation. So I when I see it, like the combination just work perfectly, it just makes me swoon. So let's kind of go through the plot, and we'll talk about our feelings on how the story progresses. Originally, though, they had stayed closer to the book, which was a much darker tone, but they didn't like the way it was turning out, so they kind of lightened it up a little bit, which served better for the film. So we open with Mowgli, a young orphan boy, is found in a basket in the deep jungles of India by Bagheera, a black panther, who promptly takes him to Reshka, a mother wolf who had just had cubs. She and her mate Rama raise him along with their own cubs, and then after 10 years, Mowgli becomes well acquainted with jungle life and plays with his wolf siblings. Bagheera has kept a watchful eye and is pleased with how happy Mowgli is, but now he worries that Mowgli must return to his own kind. So, Steve, what do you think of the beginning of this movie, where we get Mowgli as a child, and he kind of grows up being raised by wolves?
I thought it was a good opening scene. You know, kind of Bagheera is kind of like, if he had just followed his initial intuition, he would have just walked away, but he obviously just couldn't, because Mowgli's just so freaking adorable as a baby. Mm-hmm. And interesting decision to have a pack of wolves raise him, but he, you know, gives some good logic that since they just had cubs themselves, that that they could, you know, take him in and, you know, take care of him. And you'll see him kind of grow up as part of this family. It is kind of cool, but knowing in the back of your head, especially, you know, when Bagheera kind of realizes that eventually he's going to need to be with his own people, it does kind of, you do feel a bit bad, because you could tell that the wolves definitely care about him, but they know that what's best for him is to be, not just be with his own kind, but when we learn of, you know, what's, you know, the danger that's coming, that to be as far away from it as possible is to go back to where he came from.
Yeah, that's where it's safest. A lot of people forget about that he was raised by wolves, because, you know, you don't see them. You know, they're really only present for the first, you know, 10 minutes of the film, maybe, if that. Mm-hmm. You know, people associate Bagheera and Baloo and King Louie later on as the prominent, and Shere Khan too as well. Miranda, what do you think of the opening of this movie?
I actually really love it. My mom used to have this saying when we were kids. She'd be like, when we'd do something like horrible, and she'd be like, "What, were you raised by wolves?" So I kind of like the fact that they did that and tie that in, because apparently it's not a new saying. Like, my mom didn't come up with that. It's been around for a really long time. So I think having him be raised by wolves is like really good to kind of show that joke side of things, but also like to show where he came from, because you're right, everybody does think that technically Baloo and everyone that we're about to meet or who raised him, and they did to an aspect, but showing him as an actual, like, as they call it, little man cub, little baby, I think is important to the story.
Yep. Yeah. All right, so one night the Wolfpack parents meet at Council Rock, having learned that Shere Khan, a man-eating Bengal tiger, has returned to the pack's part of the jungle. The pack leader, Akela, decides that Mowgli must leave the jungle for his own safety. Bagheera volunteers to escort him to the man village. They leave that very night, but Mowgli is determined to stay in the jungle. He and Bagheera rest in a tree for the night, where Ka, a hungry Indian python, tries to devour Mowgli, but Bagheera intervenes. The next morning, Mowgli tries to join the elephant patrol led by Colonel Hathi and his wife Winifred. Bagheera finds Mowgli, but after a fight decides to leave Mowgli on his own, and Mowgli soon meets up with the laid-back, fun-loving sloth bear Baloo, who promises to raise Mowgli himself and never take him to the man village. So, Miranda, we get kind of learn like the central plot here of Shere Khan, who actually, you know, it's funny, as we talk about this on some of our other episodes where, you know, you don't see a character for so long. This is right. The major villain. He doesn't show up for 47 minutes in this movie, which I think actually works out for that character in this one, because he is so terrifying is not really the right word, because of how George Sanders voices him. Sinister. Yeah, sinister is a great word. And then we also have a fun scene with Ka, who is, I guess, a minor antagonist in this movie as well. And then we, at the end of the sequence, we meet Baloo. So what do you think of this part of the film?
You know, I'm noticing a common theme that I didn't notice prior, that for some reason, antagonists are not showing up until further into the movie. And I never, as a child, realized this. I didn't actually realize this until our watch through. This happened, I think, on our previous movie that we watched, and it may have even happened before then, and we just didn't notice it. I actually really like this scene. So what's interesting, though, is while we don't see him, he doesn't show up for 40-something minutes, and he is already mentioned, and he is already kind of in the back of your mind. So I really like this part of the movie, because I think what Jungle Book does really good is they show you all aspects of Mowgli's life, even if it only takes them 15, 20 minutes to start from beginning and get to where people really start getting interested in him as a young boy. So much like the first part, I think it's very well needed and done, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's all about, I mean, when you think about the storytelling aspect, I mean, how effective it is that we don't need to see Shere Khan as that early in this movie, you know, just hearing about him and the fact that he is the, you know, inciting incident is his return is really what gets the emotion of the story that we watch underway. So, you know, he's such a presence without actually being present. Steve, what did you think of, you know, the learning about Shere Khan coming back? Our interaction with Ka and meeting up with Baloo.
I agree with you that it is interesting that we only hear about Shere Khan and we don't see him until much later in the film. But I do think it works really well, because it kind of, you know, you keep it like in the back of your head. Like, we see like all this go on, and you know, we see like all these different things with Mowgli, and he's, you know, meeting all these different animals. But in the back of your mind, you're just, you know, you're thinking back, you know, just thinking back to the fact that, you know, Shere Khan is around, and you're not sure when he's going to strike. And I like how they kind of keep that little bit of tension going throughout the film. I do like Ka as a character, and obviously part of that is the guy, again, the actor who voices him, Sterling Holloway, does a really good job. Kind of giving him some personality. And, you know, how he like tries to hypnotize Mowgli and then try to kill, you know, eat him. But Bagheera stops him. And the running joke of him constantly being pushed out of the tree by Mowgli, and like the insane like length he falls is really funny, I think. And then you know, the whole thing with like Colonel Haythi and the elephants, and that sequence is pretty fun. Like Haythi's trying to run like a really tight ship, and he's very strict in his guidelines, and then like finally, you know, Bagheera's just like had it with Mowgli, you know, trying to take him back to the man village. Mowgli adamantly does not want to go, wants to stay, and they eventually split up, and that's where, you know, Mowgli eventually finds Baloo. So I think this was a nice little chain of sequences to kind of keep things moving along. And like I said, you always just have in the back of your head, knowing that the threat, there's always the ever growing threat of Shere Khan. You just don't know when he's going to show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Colonel Haythi is a great, I love that. He is such a military man. He mentions that he was decorated from a battle in 1888. So that kind of puts us here at the late 1800s, early 1900s, which is when Kipling did write it as well. And we get two of, we'll get to the next scene, but we get to probably the two most famous songs from this movie, which is Baloo singing the Bear Necessities, as well as then we get I Want to Be Like You by King Louie. Steve, where would you rank those songs in terms of where they place in Disney films, all time, animated songs, I guess?
Oh, they're definitely up there. They're very, very memorable, very fun. The Bear Necessities, I think, is definitely, I think people will probably remember that song more from the film than I Want to Be Like You, but I do think they're pretty close. I mean, Bear Necessities, just, you know, a fun, you know, really fun song. You know, Baloo just kind of sing about how life is so easy, and how it's, you know, just got to go with the bear, you know, learn the bare necessities of life will come to you, and you'll be able to live your life just fine. And then we got a good little, and then I Want to Be Like You is a fun, you know, dance sequence with King Louie and the monkeys, and then Baloo coming in all like in his disguise and dancing with King Louie. It's just such a really good, really good song. And I think both of them still hold up pretty well as classic trademark Disney songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Louis Prima is the voice of Louis, which I did not know until I did some research. They originally wanted Louis Armstrong to voice King Louis, but they felt that it would maybe a little bit racially insensitive, which, again, this movie does have a disclaimer that they've added to Disney Plus, that about talking about, you know, how there are portrayals in whether they're voice cast or whatever, and that, you know, should be, you know, you don't want to alter the film, but there should be education and learning about it,
right?
So Miranda, what do you think of these two songs?
These are actually two of my favorite songs in all of Disney, even though Jungle Book, it's not my favorite. I find it pretty high up there in the ranking of movies, but it's not my favorite. But these two songs are actually two of my favorite songs. And I think that may be because of what I mentioned at the beginning of the pod, this having like strong connection to my little brother, who this is like the only time that he would sit still and he would sing I Want to Be Like You like over and over and over. He had ADHD as a kid, so like the fact that he could sit still and like remember all the words to this song was like really impressive. And I still to this day can hear him singing that. And I think to me, it's the better song of the two. And maybe it's just because of that emotional connection. But I think they're fantastic.
Oh, yeah. All right. So shortly after, a group of monkeys kidnap Mowgli and take him to their leader, King Louie, the orangutan. King Louie offers to help Mowgli stay in the jungle if he will tell Louie how to make fire like the other humans. Since he was not raised by humans, Mowgli does not know how to do it. Bagheera and Baloo arrive and rescue Mowgli in the ensuing chaos. King Louie's palace is demolished to rubble. Bagheera speaks to Baloo that night and convinces him that the jungle will never be safe for Mowgli with Shere Khan around. In the morning, Baloo reluctantly explains to Mowgli that the man village is best for him, but Mowgli accuses him of breaking his promise and runs away. As Baloo sets off in search of Mowgli, Bagheera rallies with the help of Hathi and his patrol. However, Shere Khan himself, who is eavesdropping on Bagheera and Hathi, is now determined to hunt and kill Mowgli himself. So we have the fun sequence with the palace getting destroyed. And like Steve mentioned, Baloo showing up in his disguise. But, you know, we have, Bagheera really has to talk some sense into Baloo, saying, you know, you're really not doing what's best for Mowgli here. And Baloo reluctantly has to agree. And we kind of get, like a breakup, so to speak, where, you know, we have our protagonists split up and Mowgli is now all alone. And of course, Shere Khan just happens to be in the right place at the right time to learn some information. So Miranda, what would you think of, this part of the movie where, Mowgli is starting to get himself in a little bit deeper trouble?
I thought it was pretty interesting. I didn't even think about the fact that, you know, he was raised by wolves and then was raised in the jungle. So when it comes along, like, show us how to do this, teach us how to do this. And he's like, I can't. I never stopped to think, because when you're watching this, for all intents and purposes, he is a little boy. And so I remember as a kid having this moment of like, why can't he help them with this people thing? So I think it's important to show, kind of that, I don't want to use the word naive, but like, unknowing. He's not dumb, obviously. He just doesn't know. And I think that's part of what gets him in trouble, is he doesn't really know. He lives like an animal in the jungle, not in a bad way, but so he's getting into trouble because he doesn't really know. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Steve, what do you think of this part of the movie?
Yeah, I think, we got the whole dance sequence with I Want to Be Like You, and then the ensuing chase, the monkeys trying to keep Mowgli. And that's actually one thing we didn't mention was when the monkeys capture Mowgli the first time and they outsmart Baloo and cause him to fall down the cliff was kind of mean-spirited by them. And then, Baloo and Bagheera try to save him, and that leads to the palace being destroyed, which you do feel kind of bad for Louie, because he seemed to love that palace, and now it's nothing but rubble. And yeah, like you said, it's, Bagheera definitely trying to become the voice of reason, because Baloo obviously wants Mowgli to stay with him, but Bagheera kind of reminded him, Shere Khan's back. He needs to be with his own people, and that's a, kind of sad seeing him and Mowgli falling out there, where Mowgli kind of is like, I thought you were my friend, and now you're signing with Bagheera. It's like, I thought I could trust you. And like you said, yeah, that moment where Shere Khan kind of realizes that Mowgli's on his own now, and he sees his opening, he's going to try to take it.
Now, what would you guys classify King Louie as? Because he's not necessarily an antagonist, but he's not a protagonist. Yeah. He kind of like gets in the way, I guess, so to speak. Like I guess we talked about Madame Mim in our last episode of Sword in the Stone, where she kind of is still like not, again, she's kind of an antagonist, but she's more like a nuisance or a detour. So, Steve, mm-hmm. What would you consider King Louie? Like, where does he lie in terms of which side he should be on?
I don't think he's really on his side. I think he's really just out for himself. Like the whole reason that he had Mowgli brought to him was because he thinks that Mowgli can show him how to make fire, because Mowgli is, Mowgli's a man, but obviously since Mowgli doesn't know, Louie kind of Louie thinks he's holding out on him. Like he thinks Mowgli does know, he's just holding out on him, but Mowgli like legitimately does not know. And, and then when Baloo and Bagheera show up, they fight to keep him, because they want him around. So I wouldn't say Louie's on either side. I think he's really just more out for self.
Yeah. He's kind of a wild card, I guess you might want to say. Miranda, yeah. What do you think of where Louie lies in this story?
My best analogy for Louis is kind of comparable to someone like Deadpool, where they're not a villain and they're not a hero. They're not really, which I know some people say anti-hero is a villain. It's not. He's not really any of those things. He's kind of there for himself, and he's the funny character that, like, he doesn't really mean you any harm, but in the end of things, if it gets him what he wants, then I guess it's okay. So I'm with you. I don't really think he's antagonist. Oh, Wiki lists him as a minor character, but I actually think he's a very important character. I just think he's out for himself. He's not bad. He's not good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So meanwhile, Mowgli encounters Ka again, who again attempts to eat him, but he escapes thanks to the unwitting intervention of the suspicious Shere Khan. As a storm gathers, a depressed Mowgli encounters a group of friendly vultures who accept Mowgli as a fellow outcast. Shere Khan appears shortly after scaring off the vultures and confronting Mowgli. Baloo rushes to the rescue and tries to keep Shere Khan away from Mowgli, but is nearly killed. When lightning strikes nearby a nearby tree, it sets it ablaze. The vultures swoop in to distract Shere Khan, while Mowgli grabs a large flaming branch and ties it to the tiger's tail. Shere Khan, who is terrified of fire, panics and runs away. So, you know, the vultures are clearly patterned after the Beatles, who they had tried to get. So he's like, what's going on with him? You know, very George Harrison, Ringo Starr-esque mm-hmm. in the voices. And we learn about Shere Khan, who the great George Sanders, he's just a very matter-of-fact villain. He kind of like seems like he likes to play with his food, so to speak. And he monologues a little bit, but he also has an Achilles heel, which is fire, which, you know, to an animal, like I would assume is terrifying, especially you could be the biggest, baddest, you know, jungle cat out there. But, you know, fire is still scary to any creature. So Miranda, so we meet these vultures who are, again, they're, you know, you would think when you think vultures, you would think they would be antagonists. Which we right. do see in a later film. We do see some vultures. But they're kind of just like, they're like the weirdos, I guess. Mm-hmm. Where they're on their own. They have like their own table in the cafeteria that is the jungle. And right. they welcome Mowgli to sit with them. And then, you know, Shere Khan shows up, though, to, you know, do what he's got to do. And for his own self-preservation and live up to his legend. So what did you think of these the vultures and the fight with Shere Khan and his ultimate downfall?
Well, I think the vultures are just kind of like a funny little side thing that, I mean, they could have left them out, but I find them highly entertaining. And they're like, yeah, we'll be your friend, but they just keep kind of sidetracking Mowgli with what he's doing with their like really pointless arguments. They're just kind of really fun. But with Shere Khan appearing and the Mowgli fight, I think it was inevitable. Like, we all saw this coming. It was going to happen. And it is scary to think he's just this little boy fighting this tiger. But I don't know. I think it's something that we just, like, knew was going to take place. And again, it's a Disney movie, and I think you said this on a couple other things where we're like, we knew he was going to win. Like, we knew it was all going to turn out okay. But there's just this moment of like, man, that's a little like terrifying, being tracked by Shere Khan. I mean, who?
Yeah, I mean, I think my son had come in and was watching it when the Baloo, fights Shere Khan and is down. And I don't know. I couldn't remember if Dylan's actually ever seen the movie all the way through. And he kind of looks at me. He goes, does Baloo die? I said, he's not a parent, so I think he's okay. You know, Disney likes to kill off parents. I was like, I was joking true, around with him. Steve, what'd you think of the vultures and, you know, the Shere Khan kind of, you know, getting his prey and about to pounce, so to speak.
But before that, quickly, Mowgli's, just to go back to Mowgli's second encounter with Kai, another kind of forgotten song, Trust in Me, pretty memorable mm-hmm. Song for the film, along with the other two. And a little interesting kind of interaction with Ka and Shere Khan, where Ka is basically trying to keep, you know, Shere Khan from getting Mowgli because he wants him for himself. But Mowgli ends up escaping from him again. And then I love the vultures. I think they're really good. They're really fun characters. You know, they're just kind of like, you know, it's like, so what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know what you want to do. And then, you know, they see Mowgli and they want to help him. And but then Shere Khan comes in. And like I said, this, you know, big fight ensues and, you know, Baloo shows up to help. And yeah, that brief moment where you think, you know, Shere Khan has killed him, you know, has him off. And, you know, that's a pretty intense moment there when Mowgli puts the fire on his tail and, you know, Shere Khan runs off, because that leaves it kind of ambiguous as to what happens to Shere Khan. It's like, does he just keep running with the fire? Does it eventually kill him? Like, we don't know what happens to him. He just runs away and we don't ever see him again. And I love how you know, Bagheera's given this whole big memorial for Baloo, thinking he's dead, but then we see that Baloo's still alive, and he kind of, you know, keeps it going because he wants to milk it for as much as he can before he kind of is like, oh no, I'm okay. And Bagheera's kind of upset him at first, but he's just like relieved to see he's alive. And I think the best part about it all is, like, you first meet the vultures, they're like, you know, kind of like, well, what do you want? Like, you know, it's like they're not sure what to do. They go through this whole big thing with Mowgli, the fight with Shere Khan, seeing, you know, Baloo and Bagheera and Mowgli off, and then they're just like right back to where they started. It's like, so what do you want to do now? I just thought that was really funny. But I thought this was definitely a really good sequence and definitely was a really good kind of climax to this film.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you have me wondering, like, does Shere Khan, like, set the whole jungle ablaze? Because he's got this, you know, burning branch on his tail. Like, is he, like, leaving, like, you know, cinders everywhere? I don't know.
Right?
And I just find it, you know, I find it, though, very interesting about the vultures again. Because vultures, you know, pick off scraps. So you would think, on the surface, they'd be kind of helping Shere Khan. Because, like, here, you know, kill it, but leave a little bit for us because we helped you out, kind of thing. But yeah, they're very fun. They're a very welcome addition to the film. All right, so you know, Bagheera and Baloo take Mowgli to the edge of the man village, but Mowgli is still hesitant to go there. However, his mind abruptly changes when he is smitten by a beautiful young girl from the village who is coming down to the riverside to fetch water. After noticing Mowgli, she accidentally drops her water pot. Mowgli retrieves it for her and follows her into the man village. After Mowgli shrugs to Baloo and Bagheera to show that he has made up his mind and chosen to go to the man village, Baloo and Bagheera decides to head home, content that Mowgli is safe and happy with his own kind. So we get a happy ending. Steve, what did you think of Mowgli, you know, I don't know, kind of, you know, finding, I guess, his own kind? And, you know, I don't think he's interacted with humans, you know, since he was a baby and has no memory of it. So what do you think of the tearful ending here where they have to say goodbye?
Yeah, that's interesting. Cause like you said, you know, they finally take him to the man village and he's still kind of like, I don't know about this. But then as soon as he sees the girl, he's like, oh, maybe I can't get into this. I can't get into this. And he, you know, she goes down to meet her and she drops her water jug and Baloo calls it on me. He's like, oh, she did that on purpose. You know, and you know, he's trying to get you know, Mowgli to come back, and Bagheera's like, no, keep, you know, telling him, like, don't go on. And Mowgli ends up, you know, taking the pot and follows her back into the village. You know, because you knew she, like, as soon as she saw him, she started kind of, you know, flirting with him, that she was gonna make him carry that pot back to the jungle, back into the to the village with back into the village. And then he just kind of goes back to, kind of looks back at them and is kind of like, yeah, I think I'm fine here, and then walks out. And then, yeah, it is kind of sad, but you know that, you know, they know that he's in a better place, and they're just ready to move on with their own life in the jungle. And, you know, Baloo, how I love that end, how like Baloo and Bagheera are arm in arm and they're both singing Bare Necessities, because it's kind of the first time we've seen Bagheera kind of, you know, just let loose and finally sing, because he's been so serious and stoic this whole time. And now now that he kind of knows Mowgli is where he belongs and he's safe, now he can finally, you know, let loose and have some fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Miranda, what do you think of the ending?
I really enjoy the ending. The only thing that I a few times that maybe people are going to think, oh, you're thinking too far into this, is because he hasn't really been around other humans before, or, you know, man villages, they call it. I was really surprised at just, like, how drawn to her he was that quickly, and how he, like, just seemed to, like, hey, I'm going to walk into this man village. You think he'd have put up more hesitation to wanting to go, but maybe that's what this whole movie has been, is like teaching him how different he is and how dangerous the jungle is to live and roam like an animal. But that was just like the only thought, like watching it later as an adult, is like, wait, he's just like totally okay with this and totally understands what this village is and to go be part of it. But overall, that's kind of what, again, like when I said, you know, you knew this was going to happen. I think you knew that was going to happen. You knew eventually he would end up with his own kind. So all in all, I think it was a very cutesy, sweet, meet cute sort of way to do it.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, you were hopeful that was going to happen and how the movie was going to end. But there are so many, you know, fun facts here, because after The Sword in the Stone actually did not do well, Walt wanted a comeback, a nice happy story, which is kind of why they tried to get away from the darker tone. You know, they wanted the Beatles to be in here. You know, they were the hottest thing ever. You know, they tried to. It was suggested they get Elvis in the movie, which I don't think would have been fun at all. But you know. One fun fact that I did not know about, and I just actually read, was that Gregory Peck, the great legendary actor, he was president of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. He tried to get a full-length feature film, most notably this film, The Jungle Book, nominated for an Academy Award, and he resigned as president in 1970 when other members did not agree with him, and it wasn't until we get to Beauty and the Beast, where an animated film was for Best Picture. And then we have also a funny thing is about the elephants, where actually the female leads the herd, the matriarch, and the adult males live alone. So, which is kind of why Winifred puts Colonel Hathie in his place as we go through. And again, we talk about the voice. You know, most people, would you guys, when we talked about Alice in Wonderland, would you guys consider the Cheshire Cat a villain or an anti-hero?
Neither. Yeah, it's kind of the same thing as King Louie here. I think he's out for himself, and he's really neither. I think he can be friendly, but I think he can be a nuisance, like Nim, but also a probably an antagonist, depending on the situation that you're in and what the Cheshire Cat needs from you at that moment.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I'm saying is because Sterling Holloway, who voiced a lot of characters, this is the only time he really voices a villain, which apparently the character, though, of Ka was actually not a villain in the book. But Walt believed that, you know, audiences wouldn't accept a snake as anybody as other than a villain. Steve, what do you think of that?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah, I would consider the Cheshire Cat a villain or an anti-hero. He's more of an enigma, especially in that environment. It's like you're not sure which direction he's going. Like he's, you know, you're not sure if he's, you know, you can when we did that film. Like you don't know if you could trust him completely, but there's still an aura about him that, you know, that makes you feel like you can when you're not sure if you really should or not. So I think. It is kind of interesting to know that, and to know that that they only made Ka a villain because he's a snake.
Yeah, and also another thing I learned too was that King Louie's not in the book. I think I read the book as a kid, and I have no memory of it though. That yeah, King Louie does not appear in a book, but Rocky, a near-sized, short-tempered rhinoceros, was to be in the scene with the vultures, but was cut out, figuring that two comic scenes back to back was poor movie making, which I don't know. I think it would have been fun. Steve, where do you rank Shere Khan though in terms of villains? Is he up there for you?
Yeah, he's definitely I think he's definitely up there. Like, I won't put him like as a top tier villain, like a few that we've already talked about and ones mm-hmm. that are to come. But I think he's definitely like a low second tier, maybe even like a high third tier villain. And that, you know, we don't see him a lot. We ultimately know what his he has like one singular goal, and that's to get Mowgli. And he does, like I said, even though we don't see him, you feel his presence throughout the majority of the film. But I just don't feel like he would, like he did anything extremely memorable to put him to like the next level. So I think he's a good villain. I don't think he's a great villain.
Okay. What about you, Miranda? What do you feel about Shere Khan?
I agree. I think he's a good villain and he fits very well into this movie. But I think when you're going through the list and you're like, Disney villains, he doesn't really come up. And we talked about this when we did Maleficent. She comes up very often when you're referring to Disney villains, and she's one that's very memorable. And even though this movie is extremely memorable and it's a really good movie, I think it's less about the villain, even though he's very important. And it's kind of more about Baloo and Mowgli. So mm-hmm. therefore, to me, I just I remember him. I just don't rank him as high in the pool of like, where do you rank these Disney villains?
Yeah. And more research turned out that there was a character, Tabaqui, T-A-B-A-Q-U-I, a cowardly jackal. It was a psychic to Shere Khan, was in the book, but he was, his role was given to Ka because he was very similar to the mangy wolf in Sword in the Stone. All right. And also, yeah, this movie really is about, you know, Baloo is the most memorable parts of the film. Where do you see the legacy now? They obviously made a Jungle Book 2 during the whole direct-to-video time, and there was the live-action remake, which we could talk about for a minute. Not really live-action. I mean, it's just as the appearance. It was photorealistic, I think, is what the actual term is. Mm-hmm. Miranda, what did you see the sequel or the live action, we'll just call it for argument's sake?
Sequel, I don't remember watching, but maybe mm-hmm. we did because we've talked about before. A lot of times those were very inexpensive, direct to VHS, pretty easy to obtain. And, you know, my parents, it was cheaper for them to just buy us a new movie at this store than it was for us to go out. So, I mean, three kids, it was super easy to do. So we probably did see it or we borrowed it or something. But I don't really remember it. The live action I did watch, and I wasn't sure how I felt about it. I enjoyed. As far as live actions go, I don't rank it as high as some of the others. I have a lot of friends that rank it really high up there. But for me, this version just is the version that I care more for. So that kind of without deep diving into giving you breakdown of the live action, that's kind of where I leave it. It's good, but it's not the best live action or anything.
Yeah.
It's not the worst either.
Yeah, I think we had it when the kids were little. We had the sequel. I don't remember exactly what happens in that one. I loved the animation. I mean, not the animation, but how everything was CG, because mm-hmm. Jon Favreau, you know, is technical, you know, genius, so to speak. And I thought there was some, you know, obviously nobody else could have been Baloo but John Goodman in that one. I thought mm-hmm. Scarlett Johansson as Ka was probably the best voice casting. Christopher Walken as King Louie, but King Louie was kind of terrifying in that movie because he was ginormous.
Yes.
Steve, what do you think? Did you see the animated direct-to-video sequel or the photorealistic live-action version?
I did not see the sequel. I did see the live action. I loved it. It's one of my favorites of the live action ones they did. I actually also remember. I don't know if you guys remember the one that came out in '94. That Disney actually did a kind of a live action adaptation of the book in 1994.
I had forgotten, honestly.
Yeah, I do remember. I actually vaguely remember seeing that one as well. I don't have you know, too big a memory of it, but I do remember watching that one. But I did see the most recent one, the one that came out in 2016. And yeah, I really love that one. That's, like I said, that's definitely one of my favorites of the recent live action adaptations that they've done, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it did set itself apart a little bit. I mean, The Lion King, not so much. I did not care for that one, both for Jon Favreau movies. It's kind of funny, too. One more fact about this movie is that it actually takes place over 2 days and three nights. So the fact that Mowgli bonds with Baloo as he does, he's really only known him for like a day and a half. So
that's strange. I didn't realize that was the time frame was that short.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh. So also we have these characters again in the Disney Afternoon, which was Tailspin, which was, I like the show. Rescue Rangers still is my all time favorite Disney Afternoon. I was in college when that was on, so I would come back to my my dorm room in the afternoon and, partake in something that you do in college a lot. So I have a lot of fonder memories of the Disney Afternoon, so to speak. But I do like the fact that they kind of turn things on their ear a little bit, where Louie and Baloo were close friends. And I don't remember if Bagheera was in it too much. Shere Khan was like a businessman. And you had the main antagonist really was Don Carnage, who was like this like wolf. And he had a really, "Come, you two come with me. I'm going to chase for that Destia bird over there." kind of a funny voice. Don Carnage. Miranda, did you watch Tailspin?
I loved Tailspin.
And what about you, Steve?
I may have seen a few episodes. I was actually more of a DuckTales was more my jam.
Mm-hmm. Oh, DuckTales is good too.
But I think I've watched a little Tailspin. I watched like Rescue Rangers, and those other shows like Darkwing Duck, Goof Troop. You know, that whole series of cartoons that came out. But yeah, DuckTales was my go to.
Darkwing Duck. Let's get dangerous. That's the great. I'm trying to remember his name now off the top of my head. The guy who voiced it. He did like Jim Cummings.
Jim Cummings has done so many voices in Disney and outside of. He is like the king of animated voices. He's amazing.
Yes, we'll talk about Jim Cummings a lot once we get to the 80s and 90s. He's really, I love that we have, we're going to have some of these voices, though. Sterling Holloway, we still have a few movies left with him. Actually, I think in our next movie, We have the return of Phil Harris. Baloo, he is Thomas O'Malley in the Aristocats. Mm-hmm. So I'm really looking forward to this. And Sebastian Cabot, I believe, will return as well. I think in the Winnie the Pooh movie, I believe, which is coming up not too far down the road. But we have a great stretch coming here with some beloved films, as per usual. Any final thoughts, Steve, on The Jungle Book before we go?
Yeah, this is definitely, I thought this was this is a step up from the last one we did, The Story of the Stone. This is just a great film just to watch. And I think any doubts that the company might have had after Disney had passed away the year prior, I think they realized they were probably going to be in good hands. At that time, obviously, we'll see as the 70s go on, some things happen that I'm sure they didn't expect. But as a film, it's definitely one of the, I would say, probably one of the best they've ever done to this point.
Miranda?
I think it's an excellent movie. And if you've possibly never seen it, or maybe you have children, you've never showed it to them, I think it's a good rewatch show now. I know it does have the warning that we recommended or we alluded to, so just kind of take that as well. And going into it, know that there's this warning that Disney tells you about. So if you've never watched it, there is that. But overall, I would say it definitely holds up, and it's a really good movie. And it's closer to the top of what Disney has done.
Yeah, Tremendous. Steve, so where can people find you online, on pods? Where can you direct people to?
Well, I've done a couple of guest spots on some other shows here on the PTBN Pop Experience. I was on episode Laugh in Theater with you, Andy. We watched The Hangover. That was a great time.
I had so much fun.
Yeah, it was. I was also on a couple of episodes making Mount Rushmore. Those were really fun to do as well. Other than that, you can usually find me over at placebnation.com, where I have several regular articles going up on a almost not quite daily basis, but fairly regularly. I have the Vintage Vault previewing, the box office report, all my reviews of the Disney films, my wonderful reviews of Disney are cataloged on the site, and I have the wonderful list of Disney going on as well, though that's probably going to be wrapping up here fairly soon. You can also find me at the Facebook page, at Place to Be Facebook page. Lots of great discussions, questions, periodic tournaments going on over there. Just a lot of good stuff going on. And that's what I got going on my end.
All right, cool. Yeah, making Mount Rushmore is a favorite of mine to do because I always have such a different crew and it's such a great fun time. I mean, it is, I think I laugh more on that show than I do anything. If it wasn't for that confounded time difference, you get Miranda on an episode of that.
But
Miranda, where can you be found in terms of pods and other presences?
I can be found in multiple sources of podcasts here on Place to Be Nation. And as I have said before, we have more ideas to come, but if you have ideas, send them my way. I can be easily located and messaged with on Instagram. That is the one I'm most comfortable with people messaging me at. Or you can find us, all of us, in the Place to Be Nation group on Facebook. We have all kinds of various discussions. They're a lot of fun. And, of course, always my longest-running podcast, still in existence, is over on the Ginny Position, ran by my wonderful best friend, Jennifer Smith. You can find Geek and Sassy there amongst a ton of other podcasts that she has available, something for everyone. And please check out all the feeds that are a part of the Place to Be Nation family, whether they're sister-brother feeds or just friends that support us and we support them back. If you go to the website, there's links to everything out there, and there truly is something for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Lots of great content out there on multiple feeds across the quad, as our good friend, the Podfather, Scott Criscola, likes to say. You know, as you know, for me, you know, this is my home. I kind of run the place a little bit on the Pop Experience with Miranda. It helps out a lot. All kinds of different shows. You know, I don't know if Great Debate will be back by now. Year in Pop, like Steve mentioned, making Mount Rushmore, Laughing Theater. I always like to change it up. You know, you know, I get the itch every so often, and I think of a new show that I want to do and work with somebody. So Miranda and I, by this time, will have launched our newest venture together. Mm-hmm. It is the most sensational, inspirational, celebrational, Muppetational podcast. Look for that monthly as we talk about the endearing show, The Muppet Show, every month here on this very feed. You can find me as well on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network with Evolution and Great Debate Wrestling. Those are quarterly, I would say. I could tell you, though, probably by the time you hear this pod, I may or may not have done the latest episode of Evolution with Callum McDougall. We broke down the career of Shawn Michaels, HBK, the Heartbreak Kid. Also check out, like Miranda said, the Ginny Position with lots of great shows. I am a loyal Geek and Sassy listener. I do love it whenever I get a chance to hear my two favorite ladies of Place to Be Nation, as well as the Journey Through Infinity, another great show that over there that the Ginny does with Tim, JT, and Scott. And don't forget the North-South Connection with Justin, Aaron, and Chad, and lots of other great wrestling, comics, fun shows. Jordan brought Rank and File back over there. And also, it should be out by now, our good friend Glenn Butler ventured out on his own. I believe the feed is called the Non-Toxic Fanboys, I believe, so search that out and check out, because we love Glenny Bun, and he's always entertaining, and he's always trying to find the positive and be happy, which is great. And yeah, lots of great stuff. The Place to Be Facebook group, PlaceToBeNation.com, each and every day. And yeah, just keep listening, and we will be back Our next episode, we are going over to, I believe it takes place in France. That is The Aristocats from 1970. So, for Miranda Berthold and Steve Rill, I am Andy Atherton. Thank you for listening to Pop Goes the Classics Disney here on PlayStation Pop Experience, and we'll check you out on the next episode. Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. Yeah, man. Do da ba 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 da do da 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 da